When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi there. I'm K-Town. And on this edition of Mysterious Radio...
I moved down to New Orleans to start working with a field parapsychologist. And it was really kind of funny because I went down on a vacation with my best friend, and it was January of 1995. And we were checking into our hotel, and my best friend flew in from Chicago and I flew in from Ohio, and we were starving, and we're checking into the hotel, and I leaned over the desk and I said, I was about to say, where should we go to eat? You know, like a normal tourist kind of question. And out of my mouth said, where do you guys keep the real ghosts? And I don't know who was more shocked, this chick behind the counter or me. And she looked at me like I had just asked her where I could buy like a wealth of drugs or something. And I'm sitting there thinking, why did I say that? And she leans over the desk, like, you know, just between you and me kind of thing. And she says, you know, there's a real parapsychologist in New Orleans doing research. And I'm like, really? And she says, and he's doing this kind of tour. And I'm like, oh my God, color us there. And I don't even know why I wanted to go. So my best friend, she did not want to go because she does not like things like this. And, but I convinced her, I said, well, I'm going to go to all the art galleries with you. You need to do the tour with me. So we did, and we had a great time. However, neither Ruthie nor I had any experiences whatsoever. Everybody else did. And so being very immature adults as we were, and probably still are, we started terrorizing Larry Muntz, the field parapsychologist. And it's like, how come we didn't see anything? How come we didn't feel anything? And he was kind of, I guess, smart or stupid, depending on how you look at it, to hand out his business card. And so we terrorized him by phone, too. And he ended up running into us while we were at the 8th District Police Station, which is in the middle of the French Quarter. And we were taking pictures with the police. And so once again, it's like, why didn't we see anything? Why didn't we feel anything? And he said, listen, ladies, tomorrow, why don't you meet me at Le Petit Theater? And I will take you in. And I'm pretty certain you're going to have an experience. And Ruthie wasn't into it. I was. We went in, and Larry had taken us into a secondary lobby and said, there is a man standing in the corner. What do you see? What do you feel? And Ruthie was like, oh, no, I'm out of here. And she left. And I'm standing there with my hands on my hips. I'm like, nope. I see nothing. I feel nothing. And we hung out for a couple minutes. He goes, well, maybe you're just not open enough, and that's okay. And I said, well, why don't you leave? I'm just going to stand here for a second. He walked out. I was like, there's like no way. And I'm still standing there copying my attitude stance. And the next thing I know, I feel this great big like vibration, like somebody had slammed their boot down on the ballast flooring right in front of me. And I felt the vibration through my shoes. And I swear to God, I hit the ceiling and I spun around like a cartoon character. My arms and legs were going so fast and I hit the ground, ran out. He goes, oh, did you see him? I said, no, I felt him. And that's how I got hooked.
That is crazy.
It was. But that was, and you know, the weird thing is all my life I've had different experiences, and I always chalked it up to overactive imagination, or maybe it was a dream, or I saw something on TV. And, you know, I mean, you know, my dad is a research and development physicist, and he does not believe in ghosts. So I tried very hard not to believe in it myself too, because he's like the smartest man I know. And so if he doesn't believe in it, I wasn't. But you know, when you have experiences yourself, it's real hard to say no, and especially when they're substantiated.
Right, exactly. I'm curious to know where you guys were, and what location were you guys at?
We were in, for this experience?
Yes.
This was in Le Petit Theater, which is across from Jackson Square. And it's a very, very old building. And it's the oldest, longest, continuous running community playhouse in the country.
That sounds interesting there. I'm sorry if I missed that before. Did you say that before?
No, that's... Not all that.
Okay.
Le Petit Theater.
Okay. All right. You know, yeah, I mean, they always say that theaters are just, they're just known to be very, very haunted. Tell me about this parapsychologist. Why was he there exactly? Was he doing his own research? I mean, what was he doing there besides the tour? What was he doing?
So Larry got involved. And I'll just call him Larry because I worked with him for 24 years. He started working in field parapsychology like back in 1972. And he has like this wild resume himself that ranges everything from telecom to the Playboy Mansion. So, I mean, he was quite an interesting man. And he grew up in New Orleans. So, as a young boy, he actually had a lot of experiences himself, and he had a lot of family in New Orleans, and they were very hush-hush about the subject, as were like a lot of people in New Orleans at that time, really. And so he had gone back to New Orleans after working at the Playboy Mansion, and he decided to start doing his own research. And what he wanted to do was find a way to monetize his research so he could continue it on without doing something else on the side. And he came from a very hefty tourism family. And so that gave him a lot of ideas. And so when I got involved, my background was advertising and marketing and promotions. And I was like, my original deal with him was, and I kid you not, was prove to me what you do is legitimate and I'll make you famous. That was it. That was it.
Gotcha.
So, Larry was just wild. Like, he would tell me about people that he knew in other arenas and blah, blah, blah. And I always used to say, oh, you sure, Walter Mitty. Right. And then it would get proven, like, you know, one day he told me how he was like pretty tight with like Robert Wagner and Jill St. John, which I don't know if you know who they are, but actor and actress.
I know Robert Wagner is. I don't know about the other one.
Yeah, yes. So he used to be married to Natalie Wood, who died.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, sure. And one day after I had moved to New Orleans and we were working, we had gone into 8th District Police Station once again. He did a lot of work with the police as well. And so he was talking with different police entities, live ones, and I was standing at the window, and all of a sudden, I kid you not, I see Robert Wagner and Jill St. John, and they're walking down the street, and I immediately break out into a sweat, and my mouth goes dry, because I am so starstruck. And I was just like, I couldn't command any words in the English language. And Larry turns around and he looks out the window. He goes, RJ. And he opens up the door. He goes flying down the steps. And these two look at him. They're like, Larry. And there were big hugs and kisses. And I just stayed inside the building, sweating, looking out the window. I was too embarrassed to go out. But I have a million of those stories, but it's not necessarily paranormal.
Boy, he sounds fascinating. He really is. He still around? Still alive or no?
No, unfortunately not. He died in 2019.
Oh man. Okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I really am. He sounds like a very interesting guy. Okay. So now you've really piqued my interest. So you guys, okay. So he did a lot of work in the police. So I'm assuming you joined him in some of those investigations, whatever he was doing what was he doing exactly for the police?
So he was doing field investigations, and truthfully, he knew that ghosts existed and residual hauntings existed, and a lot of different paranormal things could be going on. But what he was most interested in was studying psychic abilities, and under the umbrella of parapsychology, which actually started as a study of psychic abilities, all that testing was done in a laboratory. And he figured if he took them in, he took people of different a scale of different kinds of psychic abilities into haunted properties over and over, and the places that he already knew were haunted. He kind of had a good idea who was there, what their stories were, that he could test them in the field. And it was amazing. So he put together a team, and yet over the years, the team kept evolving. And I was with the team the last 24 years, and my own abilities had opened up too, even though it took me actually, and honest to God, like a couple years to really kind of accept it. Because it was like, whoa, this is rocking my world. I went to college and I watched General Hospital, and this is out of the realm, you know, of my life.
Let me ask you, okay, so was he doing that in conjunction with the police? I mean, what was he doing for them exactly?
Well, he did a lot of different things, and I don't remember all the stories, but he was retained on different cases of, like, you know, do you know what happened to this person? Do you know what happened to that person? And sometimes he did, and other times he wasn't quite sure, and brought in different psychics.
Okay, so that's what he was doing. Okay, so they were asking him to try and get someone to see psychically what happened in some of these cases.
In a lot of different cases, yes.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. But as a parapsychologist, he was very publicly, I'm a scientist, you know, but he couldn't shut down his own abilities. He was pretty darn good at them.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Mm.
So, and I think that's another reason why he was so interested in it.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, man, I would love to read his research, maybe. Does he have research papers? Like, we can read, like, some of the locations where he brought psychics in and they were able to, you know, pick up on this, that, and the other. I mean, is that down somewhere where people can read about it?
Yeah, so he did do some writing, and a lot of his files, unfortunately, were lost in Katrina. So that blows. Yeah. But I have a lot of documentation, and I just got it out of storage. So I am just now combing through it. In fact, the book that was published back in 2000, which was ISPR Investigates the Ghosts of New Orleans, I wrote that book in 3 days at the time that I wrote it, because I knew that information off the top of my head. And but it was based on mostly on Larry's investigations, but a lot on also what had happened during ghost expeditions in New Orleans. And I am now getting video and Larry's notes so that I can do the updated second edition of that. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. Okay. So those, and I like that you said that. That's great. And I would love to, you know, bring you back to talk about some of that stuff. What the research that you just told me about, that you dug out of, I guess you had it in storage or whatever, is this his research alone, or is it yours, or yours together with him?
Yeah. So, well, actually, it's mine now, because he left everything to me.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is his stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. There we go.
Yes. In fact, I know I have binders. There's over 100,000 undeveloped photos.
Oh, wow.
I mean, most of his work, really, when you think about it, was before digital. So it was, we're talking film, and I've got all the binders of that. I've got all his notes. I've got footage. It's amazing. But I was with him starting in 1995. So I was witness to pretty much everything that took place. In fact, at that time, it was like I had just missed all the investigation of all the Anne Rice properties.
Oh, Anne Rice, the writer.
Yeah.
Wait. I didn't know that her properties were haunted.
Yeah. So she had several properties in New Orleans. And so there was the property that she grew up in. And of course, I can't remember which street it was on. I want to say Claiborne, but maybe it was Claiborne. But then there was the house that she lived in, which I believe her husband, Stan, who was a very nice man, had the opportunity to meet him. They lived on, Chestnut and First? Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're
I'm
fine. So sorry. You're totally
I do
fine.
I don't remember exactly. But it was in the Garden District. It was gorgeous, and it was a purple hued house. And then she ended up buying St. Elizabeth's Orphanage as well, which this orphanage dates back a long, long time. And it primarily housed young girls.
Well, was it still in operation at the time she purchased it, or no?
No.
Okay.
No, it was not. It was not. And she purchased it. Today, it's condos. It's been converted into condos. She ended up selling it. The first vampire ball I went to, and that was back in October of 95, it was held at the orphanage. And she was there, and Kirsten Dunst was like the guest of honor. She was there. And it was weird. She had all her huge collection of dolls, which were kind of creepy, and they were all on view, and it was pretty wild. But before I started working with Larry, he did investigations of her properties, and St. Elizabeth's was one of them. And so I got the actual raw footage of that too. And he was not alone. He had other investigators with him. One of whom I actually worked with later on, and she was very cool.
Oh my God, you have a gold mine! I would love to see that and read those files. Okay, so did she tell him to come? You know, like, okay, we're having some issues at some of these properties. Can you come investigate? I mean, were they experiencing something and that's why he was there, or what?
I believe that they did have experiences over there, and he was brought in. I believe it was her. What was it? Her cousin. I want to say his name was Bill, and he was in charge of her properties and brought Larry in.
Okay, man. Okay. Did he ever tell you like what he found there? I mean, did he say what, you know, the outcome, or tell you about the outcome of those investigations?
you know, I don't remember exactly what he said, because this is like a long, long time ago for me. But I can tell you, I'll tell you something that he found in St. Elizabeth's. And this is when I was actually moving. I was with a moving truck moving down to New Orleans, and Larry had flown up to help move and drive my stuff down. He received a call and said, "When can you get in here? Because we found something." So when we got back to New Orleans, and I did not go with him, except I do have the original photographs of these, he went to St. Elizabeth's Orphanage, and they were doing work up in the attic, and they broke broke through the wall, and they found three old coffee cans, and they opened each one up, and there was a ripped up, bloodied little girl's dress in each one.
That is so creepy. Wonder why they were there.
Oh yeah. This is so weird. Now I'm like, it's all like kind of flooding back. There was an entity of a man, and they believe that he's the one that violated some of these girls. And there was also an entity of a little boy, and I don't remember if he said he had Down syndrome or that he was just what is the PC term now? You know, that there was something unfortunately wrong with him, and the nuns took him in as well. And the clairvoyants did not believe it was this little boy, but that they believed it was this man who they actually saw with a little girl up in the attic.
My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. But these dresses, I mean, I have the original Polaroids that were taken of them. I mean, it's hideous. Really. Truly.
Okay, so, oh man, yeah, you have to publish that stuff, and you have to let me know.
Okay.
When you do. I mean, I'd love to be able to see that stuff, go through it, you know, look at it.
Sure.
This is amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was so much going on. In fact, even like the house that I lived in when I first moved down there, which was on Esplanade, closer to City Park, and there was a young couple, like teenage couple, and I believe that they must have been from early, mid-1800s. That was just kind of the feeling I got from them. And I really didn't see them because that's not one of my stronger abilities, but I always felt them. And I used to hang out in the bedroom, and I was living in this four-room shotgun, and which was pretty ancient itself. And, you know, but they were okay. But then there was a guy and like from the 80s, and he was nasty. He was mean and angry. And I knew I could feel that he had killed himself. And then there were these two guys that that owned the house, like next door, and I got to know them. One of them, I remember, was an attorney. They were really nice guys, and they said that there was a guy who contracted AIDS, and he blew his head off in the backyard. So I believe that was the same guy.
Man, that is something else. I'm interested in knowing more about how you and him, when you got with him, your team actually went into, first of all, how did you find out about these cases? And then did he prepare his self, like his aura, to do some type of ritual or some type of something to protect himself, or, you know, or maybe you did it. I don't know. Did you guys do that?
Good questions. He was retained most of the time because he was fairly well known in New Orleans. He came from a big hospitality and tourism family, and he himself was fairly well known. And so, at the time that I got involved, it wasn't cool to be haunted. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, people just kind of like, let's not talk about that. And so he, when he was retained by the Bourbon Orleans Hotel, he convinced the general manager at the time, let me go public with this because you're never going to have like an available room. You're going to be so solidly booked. And he explained it to the GM. The GM believed him. Larry went public with it. And boom, it was... Larry was so correct on his assessment of that. And then like every other hotel, hey, you know, what about me? What about me? Kind of thing. And then there were a lot of private cases, you know, general public people in that lived around there that knew about him. And so he would go in and he charged, but a lot of that, he waived his fees and he would go in and, you know, go, you know, like people be like, oh my God, this happened and that happened. He goes, well, like, yeah, your grandma's here. And then he'd bring in other psychics who would say the same thing. And they'd be like, oh, I guess we shouldn't be all upset. So no, you shouldn't. And then as far as protecting us, that is such a good question. He knew so many psychics. A lot of them also attended Berkeley. And so I got to speak to a lot of these people, even the ones that I didn't have the opportunity to meet. And they're like, oh, you need to protect yourself. You need to sage your area. You need to, you know, blah, 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 you know. And Larry would say, you know, he didn't really buy into it. And I don't really know why, but he said, the best thing I can tell you is to really kind of just try and clear your energy and connect yourself to the earth. And that was his way of doing it. And truthfully, for the first couple of years, I was so... oh, isn't this fun? I love the thrill and how exciting. So I was not really concerned about protecting myself because I was still being convinced, even though I was having all these different kinds of experiences, I was still being convinced and did not really believe that anything could harm me. You know what I mean?
I get it. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so I had a lot to learn. And so today, even since Larry has passed, I sometimes get requests, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'll think about it. I'll try tuning in. And it's like, no, it seems like, I don't know that I can help you.
So. Well, you have to be, you know, really picky and choosy on this stuff. And you don't want to walk into something that's going to bring harm to you. Cause I'm telling you, stuff is very real. Energetically, yes. When you start learning about energy and how energy can affect you and your health and everybody else's health and well-being, then you really start taking it very seriously. I want to ask you about, did his psychic, okay, did you were with him and you guys went out on these investigations. Was he, I mean, or did you guys bring along the same psychics every time? And who were they, if you did?
So so it changed. It changed. Right before I got down there, there were several different psychics. One of which, this woman, I swear, I think she was in her 80s, but she was amazing. And then there were a lot of much younger people as well. And it was women and men, and they were all very talented. And then there were a few that, I got to work with. One was, a Carrie Roy, and one was, Maria Saganis, although she wasn't from New Orleans, but she would fly in quite often. And then, by 97, I went with Larry, for him, it was back to California. For me, it was like, hello, California. And so then there were a lot more, psychics that were, brought in, at that point. And they were different kinds of psychics, doing different kinds of things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they all don't have the same ability. So
no, not at all.
I totally get
it. Not at all. In fact, I used to, say all the time when people ask me about, you know, like, what did I do on the team? And I said, well, I do what like any monkey can do. I run the Polaroid camera. but I was personally used as a human instrument because I was actually opened up quite a bit and would have a lot of empathic episodes and sometimes physical mediumship episodes. But I had no idea if it was going to happen or not. So I was just, you know, hey, I got the Polaroid. And then
yeah,
stuff happened. And I, a lot of times after the fact, I wouldn't remember, well, especially mediumship stuff, I would not remember it. But because of videotape, I'd be like, whoa, it was kind of cool.
It sounds amazing. Really, it really does. I have some more questions for you, though, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Now, do you know if there, I'm just wondering, you know, I'm not from that area. I don't know anything about it, really. But is there a home, like a private residence that you guys investigated that is known to be very, very haunted besides the plantations? Okay, we hear all about the plantations down, but is there a private residence down there that's known to be haunted? And did you guys ever take on anything like that?
There were so many. I mean, like the joke in New Orleans is that there's probably as many ghosts walking around as there are live people.
Yeah,
and,
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a property that didn't have some kind of activity at some time, you know, and since they travel, you just never know, you know, who's going to be where, you know. I mean, you know, we used to talk about which entities were resident entities and which entities were just kind of like floaters, which was my silly little reference to them, but meaning that they were not tied to a certain property. But I lived in a house on Fountain Blue, which was uptown, and there was an entity on the third floor. He hated us. Oh my God, he hated us. And he made my dogs crazy. And that was a lot of fun. In fact, my younger brother came in and stayed with us for a while. I'm like, yeah, dude, your room is on the third floor, and enjoy that. Pick any one of the three bedrooms up there. And he woke up one night wrestling with a piece of plastic over his face, which, because he was my brother, I thought that was so funny. But and you're not laughing, so you probably don't. But I believe that was the entity upstairs who hated us. And but there was another woman. I remember working, going on this investigation, although I really didn't play much of a part in it. And there was this elderly woman, and her brother, had died, and he hung out in the house, and she had made a lot of money. He did not. And he would, apparently was a little pissed with her and used to pinch her constantly. And she had black and blue marks all over.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. But seriously, there are just so many properties that have activity. And you know, one day, and this is shortly after I moved to New Orleans, Larry and I were driving down Esplanade toward the quarter, and we were driving in front of a school, and there was a great big tree. And this is like middle of the afternoon. It's during the summer. You know, it was a gorgeous day. We had the top down, and there was this kid, like this teenage boy, who caught my eye. And I don't know why, but he did. And it's not like he was dressed in any kind of period outfit. He seemed like pretty modern day. And he was standing up against the tree with his right foot, the bottom of his right foot, up against the tree. And I don't know, again, why he caught my eye, but I was like watching him as we're driving by. And he looked at me, looked away, and he bent at the waist like he was going to run. And the kid disappeared. And I was like, ah. Oh. And Larry goes, oh, did you see that kid disappear? I'm like, oh my God, you saw that? And then I fought with him for the next hour. I did not see that. You did not see that. It did not happen. It blew my mind. But so
that is wild.
you just never know. You never know.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy place. Crazy place.
What about, I'm interested in this because I don't know what year Hurricane Katrina happened, but I would like to know if he was still in, you know, if you guys were still actively investigating, because I've heard so many things about, you know, what happened afterwards. There was a lot of paranormal activity being reported, even by some of the construction people coming down. They would see, you know, I mean, stuff that would scare the, you know, hell yeah. out of them. And it was making the local news and stuff. So did you guys ever deal with anything like that?
That was such an amazing, it was awful tragedy. We were in Hollywood at the time, but we had reopened Ghost Expeditions in New Orleans. So we had researchers that were running them at that time. And Katrina hit at the end of August of 2005. We went back to New Orleans in, the end of June of 2007. And the mayor, Ray Nagin, Larry sat on his board, his Hollywood South board, trying to bring filming to the city, which he successfully did. It was amazing. I'm talking about the mayor. And he asked Larry during one of these meetings, would you consider coming back and doing something in tourism again, kind of help pump up, tourism again, help us, give us another method of making money, to get the city back on its feet. So we went back to New Orleans and we were working on this huge project and it was amazing. But yeah, we did get to go through a lot of other properties and we ended up, oh my God, we ended up living, taking an apartment at a very modern apartment complex, and it was right across the street from the river. And there was this huge empty land, though, between the end of our apartment was on the end of the complex to the street and then the river across the street. And it had a bazillion frogs. And I kept saying to Larry, I'm like, I think this is where they threw the dead body. I think this is where they threw the dead. I kid you not. And he's like, yeah, I think so, too. But that didn't come out. And then through some other meetings we had with some very interesting and high positioned people in New Orleans, they said, well, do you know where blah, blah, blah is? And we're like, yeah, because it was like right where our apartment was. Yeah, that's where a lot of the dead bodies were thrown. So it does not surprise me.
No.
Yeah. It is not surprising that there was like an uptick in not even entities walking around, but just an oppressive heaviness. It was just awful. It was awful. And a lot of live people kind of, you know, went crazy and know about a murder because of that. And oh my God. And you want to hear something really gross?
Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a potter's field in New Orleans, and the people are buried in black trash bags.
Wait a minute,
buried.
A potter's field?
A potter's field. So a potter's field is a cemetery where they bury people they can't identify, homeless people that are not there, whose bodies aren't claimed. I don't know if all cities, but most states have a potter's field. And that's just what it's called.
Okay. Gotcha. Go ahead.
So it rains in New Orleans, you could, spill a Dixie cup of water and it floods. And oh my God, these bodies in the plastic bags rise out of the ground. Now that scared me a lot. It just
Really?
You know, it was, oh yeah, it was like every horror movie I've ever seen.
Where is it located? Where is it located?
So
there?
That was located. Oh man, when I say it was on Canal Street, a few miles out of the corner. Let me see, what do you call that area? It's not, I don't think it's Midtown. It could be considered Midtown. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, like an internet search, I should tell you, Potter's Field. But they have very interesting burial methods down in New Orleans anyway, you know, because of the water table down there. And, you know, a lot of people is in some of those, you know, crypts in the cities of the dead, you know, there can be quite a few people sharing that crypt. And after a body is thrown in there, they can open it up a year and a day afterward. And then they brush all the remains to the back, and then they throw in the next body.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they can have many bodies in one crypt. Is that on purpose?
Yeah.
Like a family buys a crypt and then they all get in there or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Absolutely. Which was weird for me because I'm from the Midwest and almost everybody's like underground as far as I knew, you know, but yeah.
Let me ask you this. Give me something that, did he ever divulge anything to you that really kind of freaked him out over his years of investigating?
That freaked him out? There was, I don't remember the specifics, but this is long before me. There was a house on St. Charles Street. And a lot of places on, that's, you know, Loyola and... what is the other university? They're right next door to each other. They're on St. Charles down by Audubon Park. But this is like going back toward the CBD, Central Business District. But it's on St. Charles. And there was a police officer who went in, and something about that there was a lot of negative activity in there. He died, and something about a dog that died trying to scratch its way out. And that bothered him a lot. And I'm going to have to look for those notes because that's like an outrageous story. It was terrible. Just terrible.
Man.
And I don't remember all the details.
No, it's okay. You this has been great.
Yeah, I was not witness to it.
You wasn't. Okay.
Yeah.
And so tell me, before we go, I want you to tell me, like, what are you thinking about doing with the research that you just dug out? I mean, you're going to put it together in another book? I mean, how exactly are you going to, I mean, what are you going to do with it?
So I'm going to go through the properties for the Ghosts of New Orleans. ISPR investigates the Ghosts of New Orleans. And I'm going to write, I actually already wrote one version of a second edition, but I'm going to actually go back through that and plump it up a little bit more because this book was published in 2000. So these were, you know, years old, but we had gone back and conducted more investigations, did a lot more filming. So I have a lot of footage as well to go through, like really cool stuff that took place. And also the fact that we brought in different kinds of clairvoyants who had a better handle on assessing what was going on and communicating with the entities. Some of the things that previous teams believe has been modified, corrected, more research was done. So I would like to do that because you go in and it's like, oh, well, Joe Blow's standing in the corner, a ghost, and he says this, we tend to add more information to that maybe than, you know, it's not the correct information because there's not always a complete full understanding of an earthbound entity. So I want to do that book. And then I'm going to turn my attention to another book about my 24 years with Larry, which will encompass not only New Orleans, but Hollywood as well, because that was a trip and a half. And oh my God, it's because I worked with him, I got to experience so many incredible things. Some of them were frightening, some of them were totally enlightening. And the best thing that I came out of this with was I totally got over my fear of dying.
That's great. That's really great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if I can help somebody else overcome that fear, and because it is inevitable for all of us, that would make me happy.
You know what? That's one thing that I can tell you that I have gained is, the one thing that I've lost is the fear of, you know, what happens after we leave here, because it is totally natural. We can't stop it. We're not meant to, you know, live forever. And right. I think it's totally, you know, it's nothing to be scared of, which is a great comfort for me. And that's really what I hope to give to people. And I have a lot of psychic mediums on there.
Yeah.
So all the information that they have shared with me, there is nothing that ever says that it's something to fear, you know,
right?
Which is good to know. Yeah.
Now, if I could only solve why are there not two snowflakes the same, I would be a happy camper. Nothing would keep me up at night anymore.
Yeah. Well, this has been a pleasure. I mean, I really love talking to you. And
same here. Thank you.
I would love to know more about your research. Please keep me in the loop, you know, and let me know what's going on. But please tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or anything else you have going on.
Sure. Well, the best place is my website. It's kind of my online CV, and it's danasmoller.com, and that's D-A-E-N-A, and then S as in Sam, M-O-L-L-E-R.com. And then, of course, from there, provided the links aren't broken, they can find me on Facebook. And if they want to check my Pinterest site out, or as well as Larry Muntz's Pinterest site, because I have kept that up, they can see a lot of visuals, a lot of cool things on there. And then, of course, there's my LinkedIn. But, you know, unless somebody's going to offer me a really cool job. You know, I don't know.
Well, I'll follow you on LinkedIn, definitely.
Perfect.
And on Pinterest too. I mean, I love Pinterest, so.
Well, thanks. That'd be great. I haven't added anything new, but there's a lot of stuff on the Vogue Theater in Hollywood, which we had for 4 years, and then of course New Orleans. I did a lot of graphics on different ghosts from different properties that I just found were entertaining. So you can read them and go, I wonder which haunting is this from? So, but that would be great.
Very cool. Dana Smoller, my special guest. Dana, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Same to you, K-Town. Thank you so much.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FACE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FACE. Enjoy!